things get a little bit grim. But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah!
That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour.
What up, Grim Fam?
Hey, Grim Gang. Grim Gang, Grim Fam, Grim Gals, Grim Guys, Grim Pals.
Grim Pals! Oh, I like that.
It's like pen pals, but different.
Grim Pals?
Grim Pals.
What up, Grim Pals?
We're going to make it happen.
Thanks for joining us here on today's
mashup. I apologize now. I don't know how much editing is going to happen between now and 5 a.m. tomorrow when this comes out. So
we were not the most on top of it.
We just did. We've been having some personal struggles.
You were like, trying to say trauma.
Yeah,
it's
was.
It's trauma.
It, yep.
There's trauma.
But we're here. We're doing it. We love this. We love the podcast. We just got a little bit behind this week.
We love putting Taylor in a real big pickle because can't get my life together.
It'll be all right.
I'm sorry to have done this to you.
You didn't do this to me. I'm the one that canceled on you 2 days ago.
Well, I canceled on you yesterday.
That's true.
Yes.
You just forgot to text me about it.
Yes, that is correct.
I just assumed we were not doing this tomorrow.
I had a mental breakdown at around 8:30 and I was like, yeah, it's not going to happen.
That's all right.
But we're here today. Today, getting ready to do an
ooky, spooky mashup
episode. Witch stuff.
Because it's almost Halloween. I'm so excited.
I am too. I am too. And I have to tell you, this topic really got me. You're going to be so proud of me. We've got sources. We've got historical accuracy.
Oh my God.
We've got all kinds of good stuff. Because what is the mashup? What are the categories? It's like a little folklore.
Yeah, it's a little folklore. It's a little bit true crime.
It's a little bit disaster.
A little disaster. This is a historical one, which I think the historical one sometimes, there's so much information and there's so much that happens that we're like, it's a mashup. And then we're like, wait, what is this?
But of what though? Yeah. It's just a lot of terrible things happened in... It's fascinating.
Yes.
And interesting.
Do you want to tell them what we're doing, what the topic is?
Oh, do we not say it?
No.
It's the Salem Witch Trials. It's.
I want to get my pointy hat out.
It's the part in history that if you're listening to this podcast, we all would have been burned for.
100%.
100%.
Hanged from the tallest tree.
Drowned in the river.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And our husbands by association.
Yeah, well, we wouldn't have had husbands back in the day. Not willing to procreate. Yeah.
That's true. That's true. Mm-hmm. We would have married each other. Well, yeah, no.
Well, then we would have been,
still again, burned at the stake.
Burned at the stake. Yeah. I would have moved into a cottage with you in the woods.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That's today. Do you have a bright and shiny?
A little bit good.
I do. So I am a huge advocate for therapy and I love going to therapy. It makes me feel so much better, helps me through all of the mess in my brain. And I love my therapist and I had therapy today. So I am feeling much lighter and much more clear about things that I have been very messy about in the last 60 days.
Okay.
So.
Good.
Yeah. I love therapy. Highly recommend. 10 out of 10.
Destigmatize people taking care of their mental health.
Absolutely. You got to do it. You got to take care of yourself. Take the time out. Tell your boss that you can't commit to something. If you have to go to therapy at 2 p.m., go to therapy at 2 p.m. Just gotta do it.
You just have to go. And I think that it's important to, like, everybody really likes to talk about mental health support until somebody they know is spiraling.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden it's like, you're not really there to back it up.
Right.
So I think my bright shiny is our tribe, which is you and Brittany, who have been I'm not gonna cry. Nothing but excellent. Hmm. In what is otherwise a very messy time in my life. And I feel like us as humans have a tendency to hide our messiness and definitely try to downplay it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to have your people that you can text and say,
it's messy.
It's messy and things aren't okay.
Right.
And well, I don't know what I need.
One thing my therapist asked me today that I just chuckled at, because I am a perfectionist. I like things to be in order. I don't like to be messy. It freaks me out. And she said, how would you rate yourself in the last 60 days on a scale from 1 to 10? And I said, a 4.
Ooh. No.
4. Did not handle myself or my life well in the last 60 days. And she was like, okay, I'm just going to have to take a minute and we're just going to forgive you for that. And I was like, okay. And she's like, I'm going to let you sit here for 30 seconds. And I just need you to process the fact that you think you're a 4. Not going to tell you that that's not true. She didn't see me in the last, she saw me once in the last 60 days, but she doesn't see me in my life and like how I react to things and how I react to stress. So she was just like, I'm just going to have you sit here, kind of reflect on things. And then you're just going to forgive yourself for it. And I was like,
wow.
Okay. And so
did that make you uncomfortable to do?
Not really, because I already knew that, like, I wasn't myself very much. Or, like, I was, but just not, like, my best self.
Sure.
In the last 60 days.
And it's okay to not be your best self all the time.
Right. And so it was just nice for somebody to just say, like, you don't have to explain it. You just have to move on from it. And nobody's here to judge you and say, like, you have to be a 10 out of 10 all the time. No. You don't even have to be an 8 out of 10 all the time.
No.
It's okay to be a 4.
This is why therapy is important. Because right. If you asked me, I would have given you a 10 out of 10.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. But, like, sometimes you need people who tell you it's okay to forgive yourself.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that she was there for you.
Yeah. So that's my bright, shiny. I love my therapist. She is a godsend and a beautiful human. And love that office. I look forward to going every time.
Go to therapy.
Everybody. Oh, and just a PSA. I forgot I was going to bring this up, but I do want to put a PSA out there. Please, please register to vote. Please register to vote. It's so important and everybody needs to go out and make their voice heard. Mm-hmm. November 3rd is coming very quickly. If you haven't done so already, please make sure that you're registered. Make sure you know where your voting station is. Vote by mail if that's what you're comfortable with. Just please
vote.
Vote. The end. That's my PSA.
I agree.
What's your bright shiny?
You.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. You already told me.
You and the tribe.
I'm so sorry.
And also, people registering to vote is like a weird kink that I have.
So,
like,
I love it. Fetish it up.
Let's all go fucking vote.
Like hand in hand, arm in arm.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Let's sing a song.
With our masks.
And vote.
Yes.
Off we go. There we are. Speaking of politicians.
Woohoo. Good segue.
I am about to go. And I'm just going to preface it and say, I'm going to go pretty deep.
All right. Yeah.
But it is all deeply fascinating to me.
And that's what matters here.
Yeah. And I guess, like, is this like me coming out of the broom closet right now? I feel like maybe yes.
No, I feel like we have made it very clear.
Okay. Well, fine. Here I am.
We're out of the broom closet at this point.
Witchcraft is something that is like so near and dear to my heart. And the more I dug into this research, the more it made my heart ache for women and how all of the things that, like, now in modern pop culture that we associate with witches are so deeply rooted in misogyny and toxic religion. And I tried to keep it, like, very brief. But I did go deep into my research.
Amazing.
And I hope everybody finds it as interesting as I did.
I can't wait to hear everything.
So. Okay. The belief in and practice of witchcraft in Europe can be traced through time and has one long story arc in history from ancient BE through the Middle Ages, which culminated in the early modern witch hunts that gave rise to the fairy tale and pop culture witch stock character of modern times, as well as the concept of the modern witch in Wicca and related esoteric spiritual movements and contemporary witchcraft. That's my thesis statement.
Wow.
I know. People have been practicing witchcraft for as long as there have been people around to practice it and document it. Herbal and holistic medicines, which were the only type of medicine available, are witchcraft. Performing ritual and sacrifice. No, not human, but like also sometimes human.
Sometimes a little bit.
But sometimes a little bit human. Sacrifices in the name of earth and sun gods to bring about favorable weather or soil conditions. That is witchcraft. Honoring the natural world around us and paying respects to it is the genuine essence of witchcraft. It's all witchcraft. Everything that we do is witchcraft.
You like your oils? You like your essential oils? Mm-hmm. You think some lavender on it is going to do something good?
You're a witch.
Hate to tell you.
Sorry. Sorry. You participate in like religious ritual with like the wine and the bread. Hi.
Witchcraft.
Here is what witchcraft is not. It is not stealing babies in the cover of darkness to sell them to, like, Lucifer to gain his favor. It's not casting the evil eye on neighbors for wrongdoing. It's not casting yourself in league with the devil to, like, secure a throne in his, like, sulfur kingdom. That is not what witchcraft is. And fuck anybody who uses fear-mongering and propaganda to perpetuate hate for those who practice witchcraft, Wicca, paganism, neo-paganism, druids, Reiki, voodoo, hoodoo, Santeria, shamanism, necromancy, alchemy, divination, or any other flavor of esoteric practice you can conjure.
And I'm going to need you to take a breath.
I don't think that we can have like a profound and probably what is like a very necessary conversation on the Salem witch trials, also known as the mass execution of anybody who lived in the margins of society at that time, without looking closely at how this gained traction in the first place and understanding the social and economic climate happening around the publication of the Malleus Maleficarum.
Yes.
Do we know what that is? Everybody shake your head yes or no. I cannot see you, but I'm about to tell you about it in just a moment. So, the bubonic plague had just finished wiping out over a third of Europe's population.
If you don't know about the bubonic plague, you can go ahead and go back like two cycles and Jenny covers it in a disaster episode.
I put that note in here. Yes, go back and listen to it because it really will help paint a clearer picture about what was happening. Mm-hmm. Then that helped this gain traction.
It's the one called Alive a Little Bit.
Alive a Little Bit, yes. Taylor knows that because she names all the episodes. I do. So people's faith in God in the Roman Catholic Church was dwindling hard.
Great.
Having just established some footholds in the power in Europe and the Holy Roman Empire, which was neither holy nor Roman nor an empire, thank you to Voltaire, was not trying to loosen their already precarious grip on the people. And the population felt that God had turned their backs on them, and so they started reverting to the old ways of quote-unquote pagan worship, natural medicine, and heresy, which was a brand new word that the church just manifested out of nowhere.
They just like bleep-blooped it.
Yeah, it literally was like Shakespeare. They made it up.
Uh-huh.
They made it up.
Great.
So, European territories weren't like the hard boundaries that we think of today when we think of a European map. They were really divided into much smaller provinces, and there were still huge battles waged in the name of land ownership and resources and serfdom. And in summation, Europe and the church was a flaming shit show.
Great.
Got it. So, let's talk about Heinrich Kramer, a real fucking pine cone of a human, who wrote the Malleus Maleficarum. It is usually translated as the Hammer of Witches, and it is the best known treatise on witchcraft. It was written by that human pine cone under his Latinized name, Henricus Institutoris. He made it up.
Of course he did.
Boy made it up.
It's like when I went to summer camp once and said my name is Hermione. Like, boy, it's not.
No, but you said it was, so now it's true.
Oh, I made a name tag. I still have it.
I love that. I love that you took witchcraft to a church camp.
100%.
Amazing.
Absolutely.
A real pioneer, honestly.
Thank you.
And anyway, Heinrich Cramer was a Catholic clergyman, and it was the Malleus Maleficarum was first published in the German city of Speyer in 1486. It endorses the extermination of witches and for this purpose develops a detailed legal and theological history. It has been described as the compendium of literature and demonology of the 15th century. And the top theologians of the Inquisition at the Faculty of Köln determined the book as recommending unethical and illegal procedures, as well as being inconsistent with Catholic doctrines of demonology. So the people at the top are like, I don't think so.
Sure.
The Malleus elevates sorcery to the criminal status of heresy and recommends that secular courts prosecute it as such in order to eliminate witches.
Oh.
The recommended procedures include torture to effectively obtain confessions and the death penalty as the only sure remedy against the evils of witchcraft. But at that time, it was typical to burn heretics alive at the stake, and the Malleus encouraged the same treatment of witches. The book had a strong influence of culture for several centuries.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. So when our old boy Heinrich was writing this, it was published. And then quite a few years later, Jacob Sprenger's name was added as an author.
Okay.
This happened in 1519, 33 years after the book was first published, and 24 years after Springer's death. Right. So the veracity of this late edition has been questioned by many historians. I think questioned is a little light of a word to use, because there is one very obvious historical reason that his name was added, because 2 years prior, in 1517, something very important happened.
What's that?
Something very important. It was very bad for the Catholic Church. Some no-name German theologist chump had concocted 95 theses and nailed them to the door of Wittenberg's Castle Church. It was the birth of Protestant Christianity.
Oh, great.
Yes. And Martin Luther unwittingly spliced Europe in half and undermined every bit of control the Roman Catholic Church and their whole heckin' population had in Europe.
Love that.
Right. So, like, the Roman Catholic Church was already struggle bussing so hard.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so they published this book and they were like, let's fearmonger.
Yeah.
For a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then some monk was like, I don't think so. Nailed his little essay to the door of a castle.
Yeah.
And effectively split Europe in half.
Forever.
Forever. To this day.
Yeah, forever.
And I'm not going to dive into, like, those ramifications. Uh-huh. But it was a huge moment and it was a power shift.
Yeah.
In Europe. So, he wrote the Malleus following his expulsion. Heinrich wrote the Malleus following his expulsion from Innsbruck by the local bishop due to charges of illegal behavior, because of his obsession with the sexual habits of one of the witches accused, Helena Schubert, which led the other tribunal members to suspend the trial. So,
what do you mean obsessed with her sexual habits?
I mean, like, watching her while she slept, like, having her describe in detail, very super ultra gross.
Graphic
things, because it was a woman brought on trial for witchcraft, and he became so grossly obsessed with her that the church exiled him.
I mean, good.
As they should.
Wait, so the church picked, I mean, they didn't pick a witch over him, but they exiled somebody who was objectifying a witch?
Yes.
Huh.
They did.
Wow.
And then he wrote the Malleus Maleficarum.
What if they did that to pedophiles now, though?
Oh, wouldn't that be swell?
What?
So, yes. It's not like he had, you know, a bone to pick with the church or anything. Or women. The Malleus was later used by royal courts during the Renaissance and contributed to the increasingly brutal prosecution of witchcraft during the 16th and 17th centuries. Okay. So now that we have, like, a pretty good grip on the type of chaos that was happening in Europe, it's easy to see how quickly and effectively fear-mongering and witch propaganda was able to spiral out of control. The church rallied its village and town leaders and eventually the courts to try, sentence, and execute perceived witches in Europe. In 1572, the killings began.
1572?
1572. Okay. Cool. So we're working our way up. We're getting there. That year, authorities in the tiny settlement of St. Maximum in present-day Germany charged a woman named Eva with using witchcraft to murder a child.
Poor Eva.
Poor Eva. She confessed under months of torture.
Sure, of course you're going to confess under much of torture. That is why you're not allowed to do that now.
That's why you can't torture people. Not like the U.S. government gives a shit about that rule.
You're not supposed to.
We don't. We follow the rules.
She was tortured to implicate two other women, and all three were burned at the stake.
Oh, God.
The pace of prosecution picked up from there, and by the mid-1590s, the territory had burned 500 people
as witches. Oh, my God.
It's an astonishing feat because the place only had 2,200 residents to freaking begin with.
They took, like, a fourth of their people.
Yes, they did.
25%.
Correct. And burnt them for being witches. So, between 1400 and 1782, when Switzerland last tried and executed Europe's last, quote-unquote, witch, between 40,000 and 60,000 people were put to death for witchcraft.
40,000.
40,000. And 60,000.
Mm-hmm. My God.
Yes, ma'am. Weirdly, conventional wisdom has chalked the killings, because they were kind of done in clusters.
Sure.
Has chalked it up to a case of bad weather.
Huh?
Across Europe, weather suddenly got wetter and colder, and it is a phenomenon that is now referred to as the Little Ice Age. It was really a climate change that happened in Europe, and it pelted villages with freak frosts, floods, hailstorms, and subsequently plagues of mice and caterpillars.
Ew.
Right, because the weather wasn't there to, like, regulate the life cycles of these critters, and then all of a sudden they would have, like, a week of snow in June.
What the fuck?
Right. So, witch hunts tended to correspond with ecological disasters and crop failures, along with the accompanied problems of famine, inflation, and disease.
Because people are hungry, and when they're hungry, they hangry.
Yeah.
And women are the easiest freaking targets.
Who are the people who cook for you at home?
Who can't cook for you because there's no freaking food.
There's no food. Right.
Must be a witch.
So when the going gets tough, witches made for a convenient scapegoat.
Sure.
I cannot stress enough how fucking important it is to understand that, like, our present gross and foul caricature of witches that we use in pop culture are because of the Malleus Maleficarum, the Roman Catholic Church, and also Protestant fanatics as well. I'm sure you will take us across the pond here in a minute and talk about that. And a deep ingrained systematic hatred of women. And I just so briefly want to dive into that. So we all know the whole deal of, like, witches riding broomsticks, right? So that all started with bread.
Bread. All right.
Bread back then was mostly made with rye. And thanks to modern science, Albert Hofmann, and Bicycle Day, we now know that rye can host ergot fungus, a very fun fungus that, while lethal when consumed in high doses, is a very powerful hallucinogen in small doses. Historical records indicate Europeans with, quote-unquote, dancing mania. These were basically people who ate old moldy bread and then, like, tripped balls in the street.
people.
Oops. Right. People being the way that they are experimented and toyed around with either ergot. They found hallucinogenic properties in some plants we still associate with witches, including deadly nightshade, henbane, gypsum weed, and mandrake. Mm-hmm. So when these are combined, they create a green elixir. Natural healers, shamans, and pagans brewed this and found that it is easily absorbed into the body via mucous membranes. So long story short, bored housewives looking for a fun time would brew it up, apply the salve to the end of a broom handle, insert the broom handle into their vaginas.
Oh my.
Absorb it through that mucous membrane.
Oh.
And boom, you got women flying on broomsticks.
I'm sure you do.
I'm sure you do. But that's where it comes from. That's how women would apply this to themselves to trip balls.
Can you imagine? A bunch of gal pals sitting around and be like, what'd you do the other night? Well, listen, I tried something crazy.
You're going to think I'm nuts.
You're going to think I'm nuts. Hang on. Let's talk about it, though. So I applied the salve to the end of my, wait for it, broomstick.
Guess where I put it, girl.
And then guess.
Girl, guess.
Put it up.
Right up the dangle hootenanny.
And then I tripped balls for like 4 hours.
Oh, right. Dinner did not get made. Jebediah was upset.
And my 16 kids. Oh, no. And I'm sure that that was not a polished broomstick. I'm sure that that had quite a few...
Girl splinters.
Oh, honey.
Oh, Mr.
We gotta
Man.
Be a little bit nicer to our hoo-has.
Listen, the poon deserves all the love.
She doesn't need anything except, a little soap and water.
No. Let's just leave the deadly nightshade alone.
Your romance gonna be trying to make a toy called Deadly Nightshade.
It's gonna vibrate the Nimbus 5000.
No!
Oh my god!
Oh no!
Oh my god, I can't, my heart.
Pure romance, no, we call it. We call it.
I'm tapping out. I'm done. I'm
no,
so done
no,
with it.
No, I want copyright.
Okay. Oh,
we're copywriting that.
TM.
That's ours. Wait, dibs.
Please subscribe to see our witch-themed sex toy line coming to a store near you.
Oh my god, our first merch.
No.
I would die.
I would love it. That's Can we make that
a,
happen?
That's not a path I saw us going down.
No, but I'm here for it now.
Oh, man. All right.
Okay.
Continue.
Everything else, like black cats, bubbling cauldrons, old hags, and pointy hats,
mm-hmm.
has everything to do with beer.
Beer?
Beer. So, outdated gender roles have dictated women belong in the kitchen for as long as history has been recorded. And in the 15th and 16th century, humans had fermentation and distilling down to a almost perfect science. Women in charge of beer and mead production were called alewives. They spent their time brewing and providing tinctures to their customers. And at market, they wore tall, pointed hats to make them easy to spot in the crowd.
Huh.
As the brewing at the time was made primarily from grains and not fruit, mice were a huge problem. So many alewives kept several cats to keep the rodent problem in check. The brewing itself took place in giant cast iron vats that bubbled and foamed, and the church, in typical church fashion, decided they didn't want women to forget that their main purpose was to bear children for men. So the church and the government in Germany passed a law that barred women from the ages of 16 to 40 or otherwise in their prime childbearing years.
Gross.
They were outlawed from producing ale, so the task then started to fall to older, widowed, spinster women.
Hags.
Old hags. And then the last little bit, I forgot to put this in, but my brain just thought of it.
Uh-huh.
So the Wizard of Oz?
Yeah.
They were the first pop culture thing to dictate a witch as melting in water.
Yeah.
And that is believed that in the Malleus Maleficarum, it lists certain tests
mm-hmm.
to see if a woman is a witch.
Right.
And there was one called ducking,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm, where they tie your hands and wrists together, and if you sink, sorry.
You're a witch.
You're a witch. And then if you float, you're a witch.
So just drown the women.
Just yeah, you know, as you do. But also, there was a test where they would dunk a woman's hand in boiling water.
Mm.
And it, of course, would burn the shit out of her hand. And so they'd wrap it up in a bandage. And then a week later, they would come back and check it. And if the wound had healed, God had performed a healing miracle to prove that she was not a witch. And she was not touched by Satan. But if she still bared wounds from the boiling water, she was a witch. So
everybody's a witch.
Everybody's a witch because nobody can heal from being dunked in boiling water.
Oh my God.
In a week. So
I'd be like, go get the priest. Let's go get the minister. Let's dunk him in some water. Right. He's sure not a witch.
No.
Let's just test it. We just need like a controlled environment for our research.
Well, listen, this isn't about science. This is about Jeepus.
That's true.
Yes. So please remember before you throw yourself into kitschy Halloween decorations, the wish that you hang on your front door is rooted in misogyny, abuse of power, and fear mongering. And now that I have bored you all to tears with how this whole fiasco started, Taylor is going to tell us about the actual real life horror that happened at the Salem witch trials.
And I can't wait. I thought that the pointy hat was for like a witch finding her center and for her balance.
That, like, I'm sure could be something that has
like made its way
grown. And I think you and I, as people who practice, probably find that.
Yeah.
But
that's not what it was
originally. There's an article, and I'll post it when I send you the Instagram photos.
Okay.
The article that I got that from, but it's like every symbolism mostly that we get from witches is based out of this group of women who brewed beer.
Wow.
That men drank. Like, try to be grateful.
Right. Like, do you want your beer or not?
You're acting like you don't want beer.
Well, yeah. Be grouchy then.
Oh, fine.
Okay, so the Salem witch trials were a result of a community riddled with fear, superstition, distrust, and Puritan beliefs.
Hmm.
First, I want to dig into the political and social climate of the mid to late 1600s in New England, the good old baby United States.
Take us across that dang old Atlantic Ocean. Yeah, pit.
Come on over. So, getting some perspective here, the trials took place in 1692. In 1607, Jamestown, everybody go ahead and picture Pocahontas and Disney's animated.
Dig, boys!
So Jamestown was established in 1607. In 1650, the pilgrim population was just over 50,000. So in short, the colonies were still under English rule at this point. Nowadays, belief in anything that is metaphysical or supernatural has a more palatable, you know, response, mm-hmm. Place in our culture. But in the 1600s, anything to do with the supernatural, the unexplained, specifically witchcraft, automatically was tied to the devil and his work.
Sure.
Their belief is that a witch was someone who was loyal to the devil and did his bidding in exchange for powers that could harm others. And while I was doing this research, the only thing I could think of was one of my favorite all-time episodes of Charmed, where the sisters get dressed up and they're all a different version of the witch. So one of them is Glinda, the good witch from Wizard of Oz. One of them is like a traditional, I think like a hag witch. I don't remember. But they get sucked through a time portal and they get sucked back to the Salem witch trials.
Ah!
And they have to navigate their way.
Oh, no, I'd be so dead.
Through this.
I tell one man to go fuck himself and I'd be tossed in the river.
Absolutely. Goodbye. So these sisters are trying to help save the day. Of course, that's their whole job. And everyone around them is telling them to shut up and be quiet. And I was like, this is not going to go well. No. But I kept getting flashbacks to that episode while doing this research. So the idea of devil loyalty was running rampant in England from 1300 to 1600. And although the craze was starting to come to an end in England, it was just ramping up here in the colonies by the late 1600s. In 1689, the English rulers started a war with France and the American colonies. This really affected the regions of upstate New York, Nova Scotia, and Quebec.
Mm.
The people living in those regions had to relocate and found themselves in Massachusetts, specifically Salem Village, which is known as Salem today. Because there were so many more people in this region than they had resources for, times were super tough. There was a lot of rivalry between families and who should get the agriculture. There was also controversy over the town's first ordained minister, Mr. Samuel Paris. People didn't like him because they thought he was a money-hungry son of a bitch.
Well, was he a money-hungry son of a bitch?
Meh, I didn't really get into him. All right. I didn't care.
this ain't about him.
It's not about him. The Puritans thought that the unrest was all the work of the devil.
Mm-hmm.
This was a time when people dealt with a lot of worrisome things, like the aftermath of that war, smallpox, and of course the never-ending fear of being attacked by local native tribes.
Ah.
Well, I mean, they were there first. You deserve to be attacked.
I mean, you brought them smallpox and blankets. I don't know what you want from them.
Right. Yeah. Miracle any of us are here.
Savages. Savages.
people were on the edge of their, like, the end of their wits. They were very scared. The superstitiousness and resentment and distrust of neighbors fanned the flames and made perfect conditions to try and execute people based on religious righteousness.
Love that so much.
So, when a 9-year-old girl and an 11-year-old girl began to act oddly in January of 1692, the whole ass town lost their shit.
Okay. What else do 9 and 11 year old girls do?
Other than act weird.
Yeah.
That's their whole MO.
Yeah. Make potions out of leaves and sticks in the backyard.
If you didn't do that, you don't.
You're a muggle.
You're not listening to this podcast, no. First of all. But seriously, I don't know how many times I was like, I'm making a potion.
I would mix all my mom's like expensive lotions together like in a pot and she would so pissed at me. But I was like, Mom, I made you a brew.
Oh my God. I would mix herbs from my mom's cabinet. And I remember once I had a candle in my bedroom that I created like a mini cauldron on top of this Bath and Body Works candle.
Oh my God.
And my mom was like, girl, you're about to catch our whole damn house on fire. You
Here's the difference. Your mom was like an actual witch.
I know. She knew what I was trying to do.
Yeah. Jean is like a good Christian lady. And she was like, you're using. Right.
The most you could get away with was your mom's nice lotions, where my mom was like,
you didn't add lavender.
Right. Do you know that this is Italian seasoning? Were you looking for the rosemary?
See, you got pepper flakes, and that's just like, that's more for a hex, honestly.
Are you trying to make pizza?
It smells lovely.
It smells great.
We need to work on the technicality of it.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, Lord. Okay. So, Elizabeth, or Betty Paris, was 9, and Abigail Williams was 11. Betty and Abigail were cousins, and Betty's father was the good old Samuel Paris, that money-hungry son of a bitch. And who was the minister? Let me not let you forget.
Of course he was. Yes.
Both girls started having fits complete with violent contortions and screaming.
Ah! Did they just throw a tantrum?
Are we just getting our period maybe?
Oh, that could be.
You know? Mm. Yeah, you know?
You know, girls act weird when their hormones are all in a tizzy.
All right, so William Griggs, the town doctor, came to look at the girls and just said, yep, they're bewitched, and went on his merry way.
Listen, my gynecologist still tries to pull that shit.
Bewitched.
I scheduled an appointment to get my birth control taken out, and I had to go through, like, a maybe 30-second conversation.
Uh-huh.
But 4 years ago, when I was like, can I get my tubes tied? And they were like, well, you have no kids and you're unmarried and you're below the age of 30. So you need like a parental consent or a husband consent. We haven't come that far.
Right. No. Yucky. So he was like, yep, bewitched, and then went away. But about 5 other girls started showing the same symptoms.
Oh, God.
Basically, they all just sat together at the lunch table and they were like, you know what really threw my parents for a tizzy? You want to get them real riled up? All right, lay on the floor, belly up, kicking and screaming. We'll get them every time.
Just watch.
Just watch.
Just watch,
watch
it.
Watch what happens. They're going to freak out.
Hysterical.
By the next month, arrest warrants were issued for 3 women who were accused of bewitching the girls or having something to do with the girls' odd behavior.
An arrest warrant? Really? Like, you can't just, like, march 20 yards that away to their hut?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not like they have a lock on their door.
Oh, right.
So first we have Tituba, a woman enslaved by the Paris family who was brought to Salem from the Caribbean. Sarah Good, who was a homeless woman. And Sarah Osborne, a poor elderly woman who the girls accused of bewitching them. These 3 women were all branded as witches and brought to trial.
Mm.
The 3 accused women were brought in front of the magistrates of the town. Both the Sarahs denied their guilt, but Tituba confessed.
Mm.
She confessed, "The devil came to me and bid me to serve him." She described elaborate images of black dogs, red cats, yellow birds, and a black man who wanted her to sign his book. She admitted that she signed the book and said that there were several other witches looking to destroy the Puritans. All 3 women were put in jail. And that whole paragraph came from SmithsonianMag.com.
Wow.
She most likely confessed to try to diminish her conviction and act as an informant. She said that she did not act alone and that there were more witches working in service of the devil. So she just wanted to spread the blame around a little bit instead of taking it all upon herself.
Take a little off her.
Yeah. The paranoia spread through the rest of New England, and more women were accused of witchcraft, including Sarah Good's 4-year-old daughter and even upstanding members of the churches.
A 4-year-old?
Yes.
Really? Like, who's still, what's the bad? Like, she's in league with the devil.
Right.
Really?
She probably went, "I curse you."
Oh, right. She looked at the moon too long.
Yeah.
And now she's a witch.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Love that so much for us.
Right. So this poor little girl, and then what really got the town in a tizzy was the upstanding members of the church. So no one is safe.
Yikes.
Is basically what's happening.
Sure.
More women confessed. Oh, I'm sorry. One woman was Martha Corey, and she was such a good, kind, upstanding person that this caused great distress. If she could be a witch, then anyone could be, and this increased the paranoia in the community. More women confessed and pointed the finger at even more women, and soon the whole thing blew up and all the accusations took over the justice system. Dozens of people were brought in for questioning. And this is why women need to be nicer to women.
Women support women.
Let's not point the finger at anybody else.
No.
This is what we consider like modern day slut shaming. Modern day witch shaming.
Yes. But like when you think about it, like, you know that every minister and judge was in their jail cell, like, all you have to do is name the 5 other witches mm-hmm. that are in your coven and you will be spared.
Right. They were not. Okay. Dozens of people were brought in for questioning. By May 1962, only 5 months after the start of this religious persecution, the governor of Massachusetts, William Phipps, ordered the establishment of the Special Court of Oyer, which is to hear, and Terminer, to decide on witchcraft cases.
Yikes.
Bridget Bishop was a woman in her late 50s. She sounds like she was a great time, which in 1692 was a dangerous thing to be. She liked to gossip and had people over to her house at late hours of the night, and she entertained people, and due to her extroverted personality, she was eyed as a witch.
Oh God, is that us?
That's us.
Our grandma.
We're Bridget.
Yes.
She was married 3 or 4 times, and because of that, she
My girl Bridget!
I know, she was labeled promiscuous.
Uh-huh, she was hustling.
She knew what she wanted. Kinda.
We're all Bridget.
She was actually accused of bewitching her middle husband to death, but was acquitted due to lack of evidence. And this would have been in the earlier 1600s.
How so little evidence do you have to have for them to be like, yeah, all right, there's no evidence?
She had to have been in a completely different time, like, different section of...
She was in a different village.
Yes. This would have been before the Salem witch trials began. She was accused of bewitching 5 young girls. Abby and Betty were 2 of them. It was said that during the trial, if Bridget looked at you, you would be struck down and only her touch could revive you.
Oh.
People say that Bridget's shape or apparition bit, choke, or would tear their clothes. A woman, Nan.
Is this the Bell Witch?
Maybe. A man named William Stacy said that Bridget asked him to dye lace for her, but the lace could have only fit a doll, and he said that that doll must have been used in his witchcraft, or in her witchcraft.
Oh, we're, like, really blending the lines of, like, voodoo and hoodoo.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
During her sentencing, a jury of women found that Bridget had a third nipple.
What?
Which was the surefire mark of a witch.
Oh my god, old girl had a mole.
However, upon a second inspection, no such nipple was found.
Oh god.
It is the case of the vanishing nip slip. Could not.
I don't know, Judge, that nip-nop is gone.
It's nip-nopping.
I swear it was there.
So, nevertheless, Bridget was found guilty and executed by hanging in June. She was the first person to be executed for witchcraft during the Salem witch trials.
Oof.
5 days after Bridget was hung, a respected and seemingly good guy, Cotton Mather, wrote a letter to the court asking them to not consider spectral evidence in these cases. Spectral evidence would be the testimony around dreams or visions.
Hearsay.
Yes. Wouldn't you know it, if you walked into a courtroom and said, I had a dream that Bridget, like, killed my daughter. So that means she's a witch. We would look at you and be like, you see in the future, friend? You a witch?
Oh.
But no, that is not what occurred to them.
No. They were like, well,
dang,
she done it.
Sadly, his request was ignored by the court, and 5 more people were hung in July. In August, an additional 5. In September, 8 more people were hung.
Oh my god.
And 7 accused witches died in jail.
Oh.
So, remember Martha Corey, the upstanding woman we talked about a minute ago?
Yes, ma'am.
Her husband's name was Giles, and he was elderly and pressed to death by stones after he refused to enter a plea in his arraignment. He was also accused.
What?
Yep.
On October, we love an equal opportunity witch hunt.
Yeah. On October 3rd, following in his son's footsteps, this man's name is Increase.
What?
Increase Mather. Okay. Father Cotton Mather.
Oh.
Then president of Harvard denounced the use of spectral evidence and said it better that 10 suspected witches should escape than one innocent person be condemned.
Okay. A little morality.
Yeah.
What a breath of fresh air.
Family of solid men. I wonder where they're at today.
I
wonder where their line is.
They probably got burned for witchcraft.
Honestly. On October 29th, the governor prohibited any new arrests and released many of the accused witches and dissolved the court of Oyer and Terminer. He probably did not want to find out what would happen if all these witches were in jail on All Hallows Eve, which was 2 days later.
I can't.
He was like, let him out!
Happy Samhain!
He replaced it with a different court, which prohibited spectral evidence and only ended up condemning 3 out of 56 defendants. Now, he could have done this out of the goodness and righteousness of his heart, but his wife had been accused, so.
Wow. Wow.
Didn't want her to hang.
Nah.
The governor
ended
up. But
she cooks me dinner.
She makes me beer.
Hello?
In her pointy hat.
I don't care about her pointy hat or her cats. She makes a damn good meatloaf.
Let her be. The governor ended up pardoning all who were imprisoned on witchcraft charges in 1693. Following the trials, many judges, magistrates, and jury members confessed to errors in their judgment. So they were just like, yeah, we're wrong.
Sorry. I don't know. Maybe I just went with the crowd. I don't know.
In 1702, the court declared the trials unlawful.
Mm.
In 1711, the colony passed a bill restoring the rights and good names of those accused and granted £600 restitution to their heirs. Now, this would have been about $717 if it were U.S. dollars back then. And today, that would translate to about $46,500.
That's not enough money.
No. And I tried to find an inflation calculator to go back that far, but it was kind of sketchy. God only knows the accuracy, but I tried. So.
You get 2 goats and a gallon of milk.
Uh-huh. Sorry about your dead mom.
Oh my God. Yeah, you know what? She might have just, like, she lived next to a babbling brook. That's our bad.
Yeah.
So sorry.
Oops.
Mm.
Me. My bad. However, it was not until 1957, more than 250 years later, that Massachusetts formally apologized for the events of 1692.
That is way too long! They're dead, bud.
All of them.
The family lineage isn't even around.
Right, it's probably like great-great-great-grandchildren still alive.
1952?
Like, yeah, 250 years later.
No, fuck you, Massachusetts.
Did you know? In an effort to explain, oh, hold on. My fun fact was your fun fact about rye.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. If you visited Salem today, you should visit the Peabody Essex Museum, which houses the original court documents and the town's most visited attraction, the Salem Witch Museum.
Ooh.
If you're planning to go during Halloween, make sure you plan your trip well in advance. All modern day practitioners dream of visiting Salem during the spooky season, and trust us, there is a lot more of us now than there were in 1692.
We're the granddaughters of the witches you could not burn.
And now we're here to podcast about it.
And book it far in advance, because Taylor and I have tried to go like 3 years in a row.
You need to book it, like, if you want to go next October, you should probably do it now.
Yeah, or like a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, there's just
surge pricing.
The pricing is insane. You cannot find a hotel in Salem.
Stay in Boston.
You have to stay in Boston, and even then you're gonna pay so much freaking money.
God,
it's insane.
It is on our bucket list of things to do.
Absolutely. So I want to go so bad. It's just, it is such a, you know, now that witchcraft is something that is more culturally
not celebrated.
Palatable. And there are way more of us now, or people who are interested in that kind of history. And I think it's probably just going to get like more and more crowded, because we can't really travel outside of the United States. So people are going to be trying to find things to do inside the United States.
Get on to Massachusetts.
So that,
listen, we want to go. So, you know, like, follow us on the social medias and like share us with your bestie who's also into like witchy shit.
Yeah. Tell people about us. We appreciate it so much.
Love you.
Love you. We'll talk to you soon. Talk at you soon.
Ha.
Ha. Goodbye. Bye.